one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies take 2 out of 3 from the Marlins here to start off the week, winning big on Monday and Tuesday, and then losing big on Wednesday behind Andrew Painter. Another disastrous start from him on Wednesday, one that mercifully sends him down to AAA. We'll get into that news. We'll talk about it's just kind of a bad time overall for Phillies prospects. We'll go over some of that stuff. But then we'll get to the good news from the series here against Miami. Overall, winning 2 out of 3. Some nice moments, some good performances, especially on Monday and Tuesday. And then we'll have some All-Star Game stuff for you. The first batch of votes are in, and we'll tell you how the Phillies are standing. And also, they are making a change to the home run derby rules. So we'll tell you about that here on this episode of Hittin' Season. First, just you guys have done a great job, actually, over the last few days of leaving five-star reviews and ratings over at Apple Podcasts. And I've been very, very pleased to see some of the comments you guys have been leaving for us. So very much appreciate that. And yeah, please, I would encourage you to keep doing that because it does help the podcast out quite a lot. I like this one. This one was my favorite from Tom Rend. John, Liz, and Justin are quintessential Phillies fans, forever hopeful but easily discouraged. I love riding the Phil's roller coaster with them. Yes, I think that's a good way. Maybe that's the tagline for this show. Forever hopeful but easily discouraged. I think that, man, that like hits the nail on the head. So that was a terrific review on Apple Podcasts. If you haven't left one yet, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. Would love to hear what you all think about the show. All right, Phillies win 7-0 on Monday. They win 8-2 on Tuesday, and then get their doors blown off in response in the finale, 12-4 on Wednesday. It's really kind of difficult to assess the Phillies after a series like this because the Marlins came into Citizens Bank Park, a 500 team, and the Phillies have done a pretty good job beating up on some of the more mediocre 500-ish type teams this year. And they did that. In the first two games of the series, the Phillies just wiped the floor up with Miami. Matter of fact, the Phillies jumped out to an 8-0 lead in the game on Tuesday. And so at one point, they had outscored Miami 15-0. Through the first game and a half until Miami got a 2-run home run on Tuesday night. But still a 15-2 plus 13 run differential there in the first two games. But then losing 12-4 in the finale, it's kind of difficult to assess this Phillies team. You know, they have a rough go of it in Milwaukee. Then they come home against a lesser team and they do really well. And I think it's basically what we were saying. This team is kind of where their talent level lies, right? They're the second wild card team right now, but they're among a list of like 7 National League teams who are going to be vying for 3 wild card spots. At least that's the way it's looking right now. They're clearly, very clearly at this point in the season, a notch below the 3 division leaders right now, the Braves, the Brewers, and the Dodgers. But I do think they're probably better than, or just as good at, if not better than everybody else in the National League. And for right now, in the regular season, very late in the day on June 17th, Wednesday, June 17th, I guess that's okay. You don't need to be a totally finished product right now. I mean, I still remember the last week of the season last year. I thought that Phillies team was looking as good and was as primed for a postseason run as any of the Phillies teams we've seen come down the pike here since 2022, and it ended up the same way. So how they're playing in the regular season right now in mid-June doesn't really matter a whole lot. The Phillies over the last few days have actually made up a little bit of ground on Atlanta, just 6.5 back, even with the loss here on Wednesday, as the Braves have hit a little bit of a snag, which was going to happen, right? You know, the Braves are going to come back to earth a little bit. Still a 6.5 game lead in the middle of June is still pretty secure for the Braves, but the Phillies have been pecking away. So, you know, they beat up on a mediocre team this week. Their very bad rookie pitcher took the ball for the third game, and then they got demolished on Wednesday. And that's where we're going to really start here, this episode of the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about Andrew Painter. After getting shelled yet again on Wednesday afternoon, the Phillies wasted no time. And on Wednesday, just a couple hours after the end of the game, sent Painter down to AAA. The timing of that surprised me. sometimes when you're going to send a player down, you're going to take a decision, you make a decision, you're going to spend the night thinking about it, and you make it the next day, or you announce it the next day. It's, in my remembrance, very unusual to see a pitcher get sent down to AAA that quickly, especially somebody like Andrew Painter, who was highly touted and there was a lot of excitement about him. But I think after his performance on Wednesday afternoon against the Marlins, it was clear to everyone, every fan, every writer, and I'm sure everyone in the organization, they all saw it. They've all seen him falter here this year, especially of late. They see nothing working. They see no improvements, and they realized what everyone else just kind of came to this realization really now. Andrew Painter had to get sent down to AAA. He lasted only two innings against the Marlins, gave up six hits, two walks, three strikeouts, two home runs allowed, both on 95, 96 mile an hour fastballs, straight as an arrow on the inner half, right down the middle of the plate, that two left-handers absolutely demolished. He faced 14 batters in the game on Wednesday. Eight of those 14 batters reached base. His ERA is 7.06. He's pitched 65 innings on the season and given up 83 hits in those 65 innings. And his last three starts have been particularly troubling. 20 hits allowed in his last three starts. 17 runs in just 11 and two-thirds innings. 20 hits and 7 walks in 11 and two-thirds innings. That's 27 base runners in 11 and two-thirds innings. Gave up 5 home runs in his last three starts. Paul Casella of MLB.com noted this. Through his first 14 major league outings, he has a 7.06 ERA in 65 innings pitched. The only other Phillies pitcher with an ERA over 7 in 50 or more innings pitched through 14 career starts was Ralph Head in 1923. And for you baseball historians out there, you don't spoil it for everybody else, but I'll tell you, Ralph Head did not have a long and glorious career. And we got to remember, too, Andrew Painter was not good in AAA last year. A 5.04 ERA in 22 starts. I said this last week. Andrew Painter got his spot in the 2026 starting rotation based on his pedigree, based on the expectations that he would be good. It was an educated wish by the Phillies that Andrew Painter would be a productive member of the starting rotation. They really didn't have any data to back it up based off of last year, but they believed, they still had in their minds, this guy who, at 19 years old, 3 years ago, they were prepared to put into the starting rotation because his stuff was just that electric. It was just that good. He is their most exciting pitching prospect, or at least was, since Cole Hamels. There have been fewer pitching prospects with his kind of hype in this franchise's history than I can... There have been very few to measure up to the kind of prospect Andrew Painter was. But now, and this is really depressing, because everything you're hearing about with Andrew Painter is all of the things they need to do to get him right. It sounds like this is a pitcher who went from being a 19-year-old super prospect with an unbelievably electric fastball, who could put it wherever he wanted, and whose secondary pitches danced off of that, to being someone who is completely broken mechanically, and that they need to rework everything with him. It's really, you just sit here and you think, how did he go from being the most dynamic young starting pitching prospect in baseball with a fastball that made established major league GMs, team presidents like Dave Dombrowski look at it and say he is ready for the big leagues right now? How did we go from that to a guy who now they're going to rework his delivery and his mechanics to get him to pitch more like the type of 6'7" guy that he is? Pitching Ninja, friend of the podcast, put a graphic up after his last start, looking at how Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Dodgers gets the exact same extension on his pitches that Painter does. Yamamoto is 5'10". Andrew Painter is 6'7". It is not that you just... Andrew Painter is not getting the most out of his frame, out of his delivery. He has no fastball at all. And it's not good for him or for the team for him to continue getting blasted out there. It's not good for him because you have to really wonder what this is doing to his confidence level. You hear him after the game and you say, well, I'm doing as well as you could expect, you know, given all these different things that are going on. I mean, clearly his confidence level is shot. He has no answers. No answers for, he looks like Brandon Duckworth and Spencer Howard had a baby. That's what it's looking like out there. And he's not getting dinked and dunked all over the place. This is not bad luck. He and his fastball have been getting destroyed every time out there now. And the result in this game on Wednesday was the Phillies had to use six additional pitchers and Garrett Stubbs to get the final 21 outs. If the Phillies hadn't sent him down after this start, I think the fan base would have been right to go absolutely nuts. But I think they realize keeping him up at the big league level to get torched like this is not going to do the team any good. And more importantly, it's not going to do him any good. But as Don Mattingly said after the game, you've got to produce at the big league level. This is a team fighting for a playoff spot. They can't afford to throw a game away every fifth day. You just wonder, what is it about these right-handed power starters? The Phillies just have so much trouble developing into real good starting pitchers. It just, this has been a problem. You know, Sixto Sanchez was one. I mean, Spencer Howard. I mean, I know they traded Sanchez in the Real Muto deal, but he turned out to be a bust due to injuries. But he was the stud that everybody paid attention to. And you had, you know, and you go back to the, and I don't know how good these guys were, but you had Jonathan Pettibone, right? I mean, you had, who were the other guys? Dustin May, wasn't that one? No, it wasn't Dustin May. That was a totally different prospect. It is May. Last name May. I'm totally blanking. It's going to come to me later. Trevor May. That's who it was. Remember Trevor May? Remember Jonathan Pettibone? All these guys, the baby aces down there? There's one more too, whose name is escaping me. I know everybody's yelling it at their phone or on their radio in their cars or listening to this right now. It's not gonna pop into my mind. So just understand, I know you're better than me. That you remember this and I don't. You should have your own podcast and you should start one yourself. I understand that. But I think it's just like been a problem for this team. Right-handed pitching prospects, power pitching prospects. This team's just not had any luck with them. And with Painter, you know, I asked the question. What is it that's different? How did this happen? Tommy John surgery did it. Blame the devastating elbow injury that everybody thinks, oh, you know, you throw your arm out, you get the Tommy John surgery, you come back, and you're just as good, if not better than ever. But that's not how it goes for everybody. Clearly, he lost his fastball and has not been able to get it back. Now, that's not to say he can't get it back. And that he won't get it back. But until he does, allowing this guy to go out there and throw dead center 95 mile an hour fastballs, he can't pitch off of anything else. And he tried. It wasn't just the home runs that was really troublesome for me with Andrew Painter. I mean, those are garish and they look ugly and they really hurt. But if you want an indication of how little Andrew Painter has right now to get big league hitters out, you look at the 11 pitch at bat with Xavier Edwards in the second inning. Xavier Edwards Painter gets two strikes on him, and then Edwards fouls off five 2-strike pitches. Painter just could not put him away. And that is the problem. That's the big problem. He was avoiding throwing his fastball. He got to two strikes and wouldn't throw him his fastball. Kept trying to get him to chase something out of the zone. Kept trying to get him to swing through a breaking pitch. Edwards wouldn't do it. So finally, Painter comes in with a fastball, and he didn't hit it hard, but he hit a dribbler down the third baseline and got on base. But he couldn't use his fastball to get a swing and a miss. He doesn't have an out pitch to finish off a hitter. That at bat is the issue with Andrew Painter. There are no answers for him, and he knows it. He's going out there knowing he has no answers. And when you get to a point as a player where you know you don't have it, where you know you can't compete at that level, you should not be there. So he's going to go down to AAA right now, and he's going to work on his delivery. He's going to work on that fastball. It's a dead fish pitch. It didn't used to be before the surgery, but not every pitcher bounces back from it, at least not right away. And that's a cautionary tale for you youngsters out there listening to this podcast. If you're a pitcher and you think I can go max effort, I'll get a Tommy John. Some kids do this, by the way. Some kids get the Tommy John because high school pitchers, because they think it's going to make their arm stronger. You know, it happens sometimes with pros who are conditioning their bodies in such a way, but this should not be something that, I mean, Andrew Painter should be a cautionary tale. As looking specifically a little bit more at Andrew Painter's fastball, hitters are batting 404 off of Painter's four-seam fastball. Only Aaron Nola's fastball is getting hit harder in Major League Baseball. Hitters also have a 660 slugging percentage against it. There's no, and here's the numbers, there's no movement on it at all. Among 138 pitchers who have thrown at least 250 four-seam fastballs this season, Painter's getting 2.6 inches of horizontal break on it. That is the fourth least in the sport. It ranks 135th out of 138 pitchers. There is absolutely zero, well, not true, there are 2.6 inches of horizontal break on his four-seam fastball. Now, some of the guys at the top of this list is more kind of like four inches, 5 inches, 6 inches with their fastball. But Painter does not have a fastball that moves. And so once hitters get the timing down, and it's not 103, it's 95, you just can't, you're not going to win that way. It's tied for 99th in vertical drop. So he's not even getting a vertical drop on it. So this is the issue with Andrew Painter. He's got to figure out how to get some movement on that fastball. Because without a reliable fastball, nothing else can work. As Aaron Nola has largely demonstrated going back to last year, without a reliable fastball that you can locate wherever you want, and that has a little bit of movement on it that can fade away from a barrel or get a hitter to swing through it, you cannot pitch in the big leagues. So until Andrew Painter can get this fastball thing figured out, he's not going to be back in the big league rotation. And this is not what the Phillies wanted to do. Andrew Painter was the only plan here, because there is not a whole lot down on the farm to bring up. Bryce Wilson is someone you could bring up, but he has struggled in AAA. Alan Ronhell is probably the first guy that you would call up. He's on the 40-man roster. They're going to go with a bullpen game, I think, the next time Andrew Painter's turn in the rotation comes around before they call somebody up. Cole Weintraub of NBC Sports had an interesting thought. Braden Tucker is with AA, 26 years old in AA, has a 1.26 ERA in 10 starts. Look, when you're 26 years old and playing in AA, you're not a prospect. But, you know, his 1.26 ERA is third lowest in minor league baseball. I mean, could it be any worse than Alan Ronhell or who was the other guy I just said a second ago? Bryce Wilson, could it be as bad as either of those guys? Probably not. And Weintraub notes that Tucker's on the same turn in the rotation as Painter. So there's not a great option, and there are no teams looking to trade valuable starting pitching. I mean, you're not going to make a trade for a top of the rotation starting pitcher right now, but there aren't even any trades, I don't think, for the, you know, the number five, number six swing guys, because those guys are valuable. If you've got a decent one, you're not trading that right now. I mean, maybe if you're like the Giants, or maybe if you're the Royals, you'll do that. But are you giving up a prospect for like a number five, six starter? Yeah, you know what? Let's try some of these. Let's try Ronhell out first. Let's try Bryce Wilson out first. Let's try Braden Tucker out first. 26 years old in AA. I know that's like, you know, being a 40 in the majors, but, you know, what could it hurt at this point, friends? Because there's no Noah Syndergaard riding his white horse into the clubhouse. You know, that guy's not coming right away. So that those are the options right now to replace Andrew Painter in the starting rotation. None of them are great. And it's just, this has been a bad season for Phil's prospects, especially the guys at the top. None of the Phillies' young players are doing much. Painter is struggling. Justin Crawford's hitting .238 with a .623 OPS. Aiden Miller, one of two players on Baseball Prospectus's top 100 prospects that just came out today, is not playing because of a back injury. And I will be shocked if he plays at all this year. Right? Gage Wood is the only guy who's having a productive season. And maybe he is an option at some point later in the year. But, you know, he only pitched 40-some-odd innings last year. He's going to be on an inning count. He's going to be on a pitch count. So that's not really going to be an option. Otto Kemp didn't make it through the first month of the season. Felix Reyes wasn't given another opportunity after struggling in limited chances. I mean, Adolis Garcia goes down with an injury. They're not calling up Felix Reyes to take his spot, even though they were batting him cleanup in April for a few games because they had no other option. Now he's just not even a thought. Neither is Otto Kemp. Remember Dave Dombrowski talking to us about Otto Kemp being a championship caliber player? You need a right fielder, though. It's not Otto Kemp. Not Otto Kemp. Don't want to bring him up to play left field and play Brandon Marchand right, and that's not what we're going to do. Right now, it's Gabriel Rincones Jr.'s turn. That's who's going to get it, and you know, we'll see how it goes. He's going to play against right-handers. He's got a lot of power in his left-handed bat, but I have no sense of optimism for any prospect that is coming out of the Phillies farm system. So here's my take on the prospects. Trade any of them that you want to, Dave, to help the Major League roster. Because all these prospects we've been saving, trying to, you know, work around, we've traded some, but this farm system just doesn't develop anything. It just doesn't develop anything. So if there's a team that thinks you have something valuable, trade it. Because it's not going to do anything as a Philly. They're not going to be productive in Philadelphia. That's just not the way it works. They don't know how to develop prospects. They don't know who to draft. Still, after all this time, they still don't know how to draft, and they don't know how to develop players. That's just the bottom line. I mean, you can't say anything else other than that. You know, this has been a decade long problem. And even when the farm system was good, all of the players that they graduated turned out to not be very good. This has been a long standing problem with this team, going back to, I mean, really, it's the last time the Phillies had any success was Utley, Rollins, Howard, and Hamels. That was it. The one shining moment for this team in terms of turning young players into great players. All right, that's enough bad news because the Phillies did win 2 out of 3 games here against the Marlins. So let's take a look at some of the good news here that we have to talk about, and we'll even start in the loss. Trey Turner returned to the lineup after missing Tuesday's game with a bruised wrist. He got hit by a pitch on Monday, so he was out on Tuesday, and then returned to the starting lineup, and Don Mattingly moved him back to the leadoff spot. And Trey Turner responded with a good game. 3-for-5 with a run scored. That batting average now all the way up to .223. Careful, you'll get a nosebleed. Take it easy. With a .608 OPS for Trey Turner. So a good game on Wednesday. Moved back up to the leadoff spot. It had been about, a month? Maybe not quite a month since Trey Turner was dropped down in the order. That happened in San Diego when the Phillies were in San Diego. So not a month, just a few weeks since the Phillies' West Coast trip when they swept the Padres out in San Diego. That's when Trey Turner got moved down into the order. Alec Boehm and Bryson Stott each had 2 hits on Wednesday. Both are playing much better. Call back to May 1st. Boehm has an .844 OPS. And a 131 weighted runs created. Here in June, Bryson Stott has really played well. His OPS is .812 this month. So those guys had a pretty good game here on Wednesday. On Tuesday, kind of a surprise in the lineup, Kyle Schwarber at first base. It has been a minute since Kyle Schwarber played first. It was the first game he started at first base since Game 6 of the 2021 American League Championship Series when he was with the Boston Red Sox. And obviously it didn't worry him too much because Kyle Schwarber in the game on Wednesday went deep, hit a monster shot on Tuesday at his 25th of the season, continues to lead the league in home runs, and he did not have a single ball hit to him at first base in the game on Tuesday. Bryce Harper was the designated hitter. Don Mattingly just kind of wanted to get him off his feet. It'll be interesting to see how Bryce Harper reacts to something Don Mattingly said. I think it was before the game on Wednesday, where he was talking about how Harper has struggled a little bit defensively at first base and some of the work that, some of the things he needs to do to improve on his defense at first. We know Bryce doesn't really like being challenged in the public like that. And so we'll see. We'll see if Bryce has a t-shirt for that one. I'm sorry. I'm just kidding, Bryce. I love Bryce Harper. I truly do. I couldn't resist. It was just a funny little lark there, but, yes, Kyle Schwarber at first base on Tuesday. And one of the other changes was with Trey Turner out of the lineup, Brandon Marsh hit leadoff in the game and went 1-for-3 with a walk, 2 runs scored, and 2 RBIs, including a home run, his 9th of the season. So maybe we'd be thinking about putting Brandon Marsh at the top of the lineup a little bit more often. Of course, you kind of want a right-handed hitter there, because when you have Schwarber and Harper all hitting at the top, you can't have Marsh up there as well. That would be a little bit of overkill. But the Phillies went with a lefty heavy lineup in the game on Tuesday against a righty hitter, and it worked wonders for them. Jesus Luzardo was outstanding on Tuesday after being given a 7-0 lead after the second inning. He went 7 innings, gave up 5 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, allowed 9 strikeouts. He's been better of late, and this was really one of his first good home starts of the season. He has really struggled at home. His home road splits are astronomical, but for the first time this year, really pitched very well at Citizens Bank Park. The ERA now starting to get down into a more respectable area, 4.20. I think he'll be back down under 4 within his next couple of starts. And then in Monday's 7-0 shutout win, Zach Wheeler just continues to impress, coming back from his thoracic outlet surgery. A 2.01 ERA on the season now for Wheeler. 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 3 walks, and 9 strikeouts. He has really bounced back and pitching tremendous baseball. Even he's saying, I'm not really happy with how I'm throwing, but I'm getting good results, so I'll take it. That's kind of where he is right now. I mentioned Gabriel Rincones Jr. a few seconds ago. He had his first big league home run in the second inning, I believe it was, his first plate appearance of the game on Monday night. So a really fun moment for Gabriel Rincones Jr. JT Realmuto hit a 2-run shot in the 5th. His power is starting to come around just a little bit. And Brandon Marsh, there's that guy once again, 2-for-5 with a run scored on Monday. Justin Crawford finally had a solid game. He has really been struggling. Went 3-for-4 with a run and an RBI. So the Phillies win 2 out of 3 against the Marlins in the National League East. They continue to hold on to the second wild card spot in the National League and are moving a little bit closer to the Atlanta Braves in the NL East. All right, the All-Star Game is coming up in just a few weeks, and the Major League Baseball has released their first update on the fan balloting. And I have to say, congratulations, kudos to you Phillies fans. You have answered the clarion call put forth here by the Hit and Season podcast. You have put Brandon Marsh in a position to move on to the next round of the voting. Right now, he is 3rd in the fan balloting behind Ronald Acuna Jr. and Andy Páez. He has 668,191 votes. He's neck and neck with the Atlanta Braves' Michael Harris II, who's at 635, 473. So look, Phillies fans, you've got to keep at it. You can't stop now. As soon as you're done listening to this podcast, I want you to go over to MLB.com. I want you to go over to the All-Star page. I want you to go to the fan voting section, and I want you to get Brandon Marsh as a starter in the All-Star game. You got to do it. Got to get over there. I told you, this is going to show us whether or not you are a good American. This is what the Constitution was made for. This is why we fought all those wars, right? This is why we have eagles in this country. Okay? It's to get Brandon Marsh into the, you got to stuff the ballot. Get him into the All-Star game. So Brandon Marsh is in good shape. Got to keep it up. Keep it up, Phillies fans. DH Kyle Schwarber making a run at his 4th All-Star appearance. He'll get in. He'll be taken. He's a major league leader in home runs. There's no way he's not getting on the team. He is second among designated hitters in the National League, 820,000 votes. But Shohei Ohtani is the front runner, and he has more fan votes than anybody else in baseball. 1.165 million votes leads all players. And that's deserved, obviously. We all knew that was going to happen with Ohtani. So two infielders have a shot at advancing to the second round. Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm actually have a shot. Stott is in second place in the voting with 399,729 votes behind the Braves. Ozzie Albies was a healthy lead. Albies will probably start the game. But hey, look at you, Phils fans, getting Bryson Stott into a position where he could potentially start in the All-Star game. Alec Bohm is a distant second place behind another Dodger, Max Muncy. He leads Bohm by 500,000 votes. So Bohm will probably get through to the next round, but it's going to be Max Muncy starting at third base for the National League in the All-Star game. And that's understandable and deserved as well. Bryce Harper is going to need a little bit more help, guys. We got to get out on Bryce Harper. He's third among National League first basemen. He's about 150,000 votes behind Atlanta's Matt Olson. There's some work to do there, but Bryce Harper deserves to be at the All-Star game. And he, you know, I would say, I don't know if he deserves to start, but who cares about deserving? Since when does it matter if anybody deserves anything? And then you have catcher JT Realmuto is also at third place in his position, trailing Will Smith of the Dodgers by more than 200,000 votes. Trey Turner is in fourth place among shortstops, but he's only 180,000 votes out of the top spot. CJ Abrams of the Nationals leads. CJ Abrams deserves to be in the All-Star game, but, you know, and Trey Turner certainly does not. So I'm not going to encourage you to vote for Trey Turner over CJ Abrams. I don't want to take, you know, young kid like CJ Abrams deserves to start in the All-Star game. Sorry, Trey. You've gotten to start a few different times. You're playing like crap. You don't deserve to be in this All-Star game, and so it should be CJ Abrams' job. So I'm not going to tell you to stuff the ballot for Phillies players who don't really deserve it, players who have gotten off to slow starts this year. But I will tell you to stuff the ballot box for Bryce Harper, for Kyle Schwarber, and for Brandon Marsh. Get on your computer as soon as we're done with this podcast and go do it. And so the Dodgers lead all National League all National League teams in terms of fan vote right now. You have Shohei Ohtani, obviously. Freddie Freeman is in the lead. Max Muncy is at third base in the lead, and Andy Páez is also leading their positions. The Braves have Drake Baldwin at catcher, Ozzie Albies, and Ronald Acuña Jr., who's on the injured list with a hamstring strain, so he may not even play in the game, even if he gets elected. But we're still a few weeks away from that. All right, last thing. I don't know if you guys saw this, but the Major League Baseball has decided to switch up their home run derby rules. You know the countdown clock that has been timing the different rounds? That's going away. I've loved the clock. I loved the clock, but it's going away. They're going back to the swing-based system. Outs. Swings that don't result in a home run are outs, and that is what we're going to be looking at in terms of the home run derby. There's going to be a new twist on it, on this old format. It's going to be for the first time since 2014, hitters will have a number of outs, swings that do not produce home runs. This was reported by Evan Drellich and Johnny Flores Jr. of The Athletic. So no more clock or fixed number of pitches that dictate how long a player stays at the plate. A competitor will receive 20 swings in the first round and 15 in both of the final two rounds. However, this is the new wrinkle. Hitters will be able to continue swinging if they homer on their final swing. So if for like their 20th swing, they home run, they just keep swinging until they don't hit a home run, until they make an out. So if a batter goes deep on the 20th pitch of the first round, he gets another chance to hit. If he hits a home run on number 21, he can keep going until he finally swings and the ball doesn't leave the stadium. Ties would be broken in the first round by whoever hits a longer home run. And then in the second and third rounds, you'd have a 3 extra swing off to see who would move on to the next round. So there it is. It's a new, I don't like it. I don't like it. I think it was really fun to watch, like, in the, you know, as a hitter's round would finish, you know, you're trying to beat the clock. Can he hit these home runs to before the clock runs out? And you'd have some like walk-off home runs as the clock would expire. That was really exciting. But the player said that they wanted this change because they would wear themselves out trying to take as many hacks as possible. Now a hitter can step out, build some drama, rest up a little bit. But the other thing, the problem that this is going to be, is going to turn into a four-hour event. And that was the issue with the old format. It took forever. It absolutely took forever to play the home run derby because you just have these guys hitting all these bombs and it would take them forever to get to 20 swings or 10 swings or 10 outs or whatever it was before. So I don't know how this is going to work. It's Netflix's problem. It's their first year as the TV home for the home run derby. So this is going to be on Netflix to figure out. But yeah, it's there have been a lot of rule changes over the years. This has been around since 1985. The most recent format change included 3 minutes or 40 pitches, whichever came first for hitters in the first round. So it went from it was a timed thing, but also you could only get 40 pitches. And then each player was given a bonus period that lasted until they recorded three outs, got additional bonuses for home runs of 425 feet. So, I mean, they've been tinkering with this thing for forever. And I think that's just going to be what they end up doing until they decide to stop doing the home run derby, because it just kind of, you know, it's one of the few things that you can change every year or every few years. You will get some more iconic moments with this and, you know, more home runs will be hit. Baseball has been all about trying to make games faster. This is a rule that's going to make the home run derby go a little bit slower. But for fans in the stands, it'll be pretty exciting. And again, if you're watching on Netflix, you can always just stream something else. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to encourage you guys, hey, if you missed the roundtable edition of the podcast a couple days ago, we talked about a lot of fun stuff. That's over at the WHYY YouTube channel. But I do want to thank all of you guys who listen to us on the audio-only podcast. And that's the thing about podcasts now. I know we're doing video. We like to do video. It's a big part of what we do. But I still believe in podcasting as an audio medium. And I think this is a really fun way to communicate. And I hope the audio portion of this doesn't get too minimized over the years. So if you do listen to us on audio only, we are at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. That is where you can find Hittin' Season. And as we are continuing with the season, the Phillies moving their way up the standings in the National League, getting a little closer to the Braves. Tell your friends and family members about the Hittin' Season podcast. We would love to have them join us this season. And again, please leave a 5-star rating and a review over at Apple Podcasts. Let me know what you think about the show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.